This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 520, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I don't hardly know her, but I think I could love her. Crimson and clover. Hey!
Hi!
Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 520. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey!
And Connor Kilpatrick is out on assignment.
We're still going with that?
We're gonna go with that. Yeah. That's so fine. At least he's not in the desert like I was. But Josh and I are here to man the good ship iFanboy. Where we...
I'm impressed by that.
Oh, thank you. Where we enjoy comic books week in and week out. We get a whole stack of books, and then one of us reads through them and picks the one that he enjoyed the most and deems that the pick of the week. And then we come back here to talk about it, as well as any other books of note. And, you know, we're gonna hear from you, the listener. We got a lot of email in this show. It's only two of us. Josh and I are together... In a hotel,
he's looking at me.
I know, it's weird. We're in the same room. We've only done this. I count on one hand the number of times we've done this in person.
You and I have never done a Two Jamokes podcast,
right? Okay. So,
by the way, welcome to Two Jamokesville.
That's good.
With me.
It's good to be back. It's good to be here.
We've never done that live.
Live, yes.
There's always been the brooding element of Connor Kilpatrick. Yeah.
And now I'm just intently looking in Josh's eyes, and it's freaking
break
him out.
Break the tension. Let's talk about
anyway,
the book.
Anyway, so we are here together, Two Jamokes live in San Francisco. Quick warning, we're going to spoil the books. We're going to talk about what happens in them. So if you haven't read your comics, might want to press pause and come back afterwards, because this is a review show, and we need to talk about what happened in them. Josh had the pick this week. Joshua, what was your pick of the week?
The pick of the week was Spider-Woman number 3 by Dennis Hopeless, Javier Rodriguez, and several other people.
That's fair.
Alvaro Lopez, Rachelle Rosenberg on color.
Rochelle.
It's on color. Strange erotic journey about a pregnant superhero. I get to the pick of the week and I think, oh, there's nothing I'm looking at here that's standing out at me before I start, and I worry about it. And then every once in a while there's a magic thing where I'm in the middle of reading a book and I go, oh. Oh, this is the pick of the week.
This is the it got you.
Yeah, no, there was
the book jumped out and grabbed you.
It did, and yeah. I was very happy for it because I like it when there's a clear choice.
Yeah.
And I will
say that upon reading Spider-Woman number three, I feel like I could guess why it was your pick of the week.
Sure.
And I feel as if it is well earned.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Have you been reading this?
I have. She's pregnant.
Yes, no, that's
yeah,
true.
No, yeah, I mean, that's the whole the premise is she's a pregnant superhero.
And she, well, that she's trapped in the hospital with all the other pregnant women,
right.
And nobody can come in and help her, so she has to use her powers to fight a group of Skrulls, but she's not supposed to use her powers because it could endanger the baby.
Right.
And she's very...
And so, I was thinking about as I was reading this, though, because like a lot of people have reacted to the pregnant Spider-Woman kind of... paradigm of this book,
uh-huh.
And what the internet says and all that sort of stuff. But I feel like this is a scenario we actually have not seen.
It's super interesting.
Yeah,
it's super human.
It is
in several ways
because it's not like women haven't been pregnant in Marvel Comics. I mean, Sue Storm had children, but I don't remember the issues where she was pregnant.
No,
or
and I don't
did
think
she
it was,
fight Skrulls?
It was just a thing. I don't know but like most of the time, it's just a thing that is
yes.
there in the background. It's not an element to the story.
Man.
Because it's mostly men historically, and it's not a thing they're going through. And if they do, it's about protecting that person or whatever. So you've got this, you know, this superhero who is, I don't want to say historically, but at least over the past 10 years, a very tough, strong, capable character.
Yep. Like spy.
Yeah, I mean,
Hydra.
Like A-class
yeah.
superhero
yeah.
since Bendis. I think he was the one who brought it back during the Avengers.
Yes, yeah. And then he did that, the origin one,
yeah.
Malieve, right? And, yeah,
and he really, like, she has...
Or the Lunar Brothers, was it the Lunar Brothers one?
I don't remember. Like, but she's been brought into her own as a character.
Yeah.
Completely legitimate, good place in Marvel. And I like her a lot. She slept with Clint.
Right, well, there you go.
I mean, yeah. Who didn't?
Right, sure.
Well, maybe she knows what's in that closet.
No.
So she's pregnant. We don't know who the father is, which is like a subplot.
Yeah.
And it kind of doesn't matter... And you know,
well,
I mean, it does matter, but it,
I mean, the grand scheme of
they're
things,
they're going to say eventually,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it's going to be a thing, and it's almost certainly going to be disappointing. Like
yeah.
it'd be great if it really did. Well, it was like the closet.
I want it to be like the guy that like a normal guy in
just
a bar.
Some dude.
Yeah, just some dude. She had a
yeah.
one night stand.
But you know, I have two kids. I've been around pregnant women, and mm-hmm. And also Dennis Hope is the writer. His wife had twins.
Wait, you've been around pregnant women.
Yes. Yeah, I've definitely. I went. Yeah, my wife, and then, yep,
okay.
that other one, too.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Yeah.
You know, and I know how, I get how it goes, and I felt like this, I feel like this is very genuine and authentic, and honestly, if this is a thing that's going to make you upset, like, this isn't how it shouldn't be,
right.
You probably don't really care what I have to say.
Right. Fair enough.
So, great, all that's fine. I find this story
you
to be compelling.
Set
I like,
the stage.
I like Dennis Hopeless's work a lot. His character work is excellent. It always has been. And Javier Rodriguez on this, when I see his name, I think, oh, that's the guy who was before Somni on Daredevil with Mark Waid. Wasn't it?
No, that was Paolo Rivera, wasn't it?
No, they would switch off.
Oh, okay. It was Paolo Rivera, Marcos Martin, and then was Javier Rodriguez?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think he came along later.
Yep.
But he was really good, and I thought, oh, that's... And so as I'm reading this, I'm like, okay, this looks pretty good. And I got to a certain point in this where...
He leveled up about a third of the way through this book.
Yep.
Yep.
And it was on page 6 or so. And basically, so she's trapped in this hospital. She's called
in
her
space.
Friend. It's in a black hole, actually.
It's in a black hole. I'm
it's
sorry,
a hospital yeah. in a black hole. And Jessica, or Spider-Woman, calls up Carol Danvers, who is working in Alpha Flight in
yep,
this.
And Puck and Sasquatch
yep.
are in this. So.
And says, you sent me to this hospital in the black hole that I didn't want to go to, and now I'm trapped in here with Skrulls. And Carol's like, yes, I did, and I can't fix this from here because of whatever problem.
Right.
Here's what you have to do. And there's a really great dynamic between them.
Yep.
Where like, Carol keeps saying, I'm sorry, and she's like, I don't want
to
hear it anymore.
Yeah, I just
like, they're really good
this.
Friends, but they're angry with each other. And that came across really well. So anyway, Jessica has to go off and solve the problem, and that's when Rodriguez takes over, and he just has these series of... They're not paneled sequential pages. It's like a cutaway of the building.
It's a page... Where you see she's got to go through some sort of water thing, and he drew the whole page. You see the entire layout
like
of, the cutaway of the section, but then you see multiple Spider-Woman swimming through it.
Right.
So you get the sense of motion. This is very Darwin-esque.
And then at the same time, though, it's also there's the third dimension of depth going on there.
You're right. Yeah.
As you look further down through,
she gets closer to us.
And I was like, and I was reading through, and I go, oh, that's a really good page.
Yeah.
And then I flip to the next page.
The next page is the page that got me.
Yeah, where there's this, you said it, next level
gunk,
Eisner sort
yes.
of
very Will Eisner-y, yes, yeah,
typography with like there's even a Kirby aspect with all this sort of machinery. If you look at some of these sort of pistons things that are going on in this perspective, and she's falling basically
through this machine.
If you start in like a, it's a comic book page, you stop start in the upper left.
Always the upper left. Always.
That's true.
Don't get Gabe Hartman started.
And then you swirl around into a spiral. She falls around the edges of the page and then down through the middle through this. I mean, it's straight up Kirby machinery, but yeah. with Will Eisner typography drawn in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it's stunning. Like, yep. It is a gorgeous piece of artwork.
So that's two in a row.
And then you flip again and you see her falling down. Now you've, like, it's a different, it's almost a different artist.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she comes as a huge creature that looks like
impressionist. It's like almost like what's his name? Not Gus Van Sant. Salvador Dali.
Yes,
like Salvador Dali.
Like a melting pair of faces wrapped around a stump with.
I by the way, I mistook Gus Van Sant for Salvador Dali.
So. I was gonna let that go.
Okay. Yeah.
And she climbs down over it. It's the same sort of thing. It's one page.
And what's great is that you see the panels break where she comes in yeah. and then leaves, which is great too. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I.
It's three,
like,
in a row.
Those three. So by the time I got to the third one, I was like, well, that's pick of the week.
Yeah.
I was literally that clear. And I love it because I've never seen this.
Yeah.
I've never seen a thing that looks just like this. I've never seen this artist do this. Yeah. And this is a new thing and it's exciting. And what's funny is it's not just a splash page. It's yeah. sequential art without panel borders.
Yes. Yep.
And
yeah, it is not a splash page. I mean, a splash page is just character posing in a moment.
A splash page is one panel.
Yeah, it's one panel. Where, and this is one full page where the artist is taking up the entire page, but there's so much going on multiple levels. And these three pages were great, but they weren't even the only time it happened.
No.
You know, like then she, after she makes her way through these weird areas, she's got to go back, and he proceeds to do a weird 3D diagonal angle.
Look at that.
Like fast forward through those three things from a top down view, which is amazing. Like, it was just kind of like, it, you know, there was the standard, you know, comic book pages that you see, but then these pages would get thrown in and they were just, each one was more stunning. And
he's doing stuff all, he's breaking panel borders.
Yep.
There's this one where Jessica's talking to Carol and the panels are, as you go down the page, are overlapping each other
yep.
and zooming in at the same time. I mean, this is, like, I'm looking at this going, I wouldn't be surprised to see this on the best single issue Eisner listed.
It should be. It should be. And the thing is that, like, what I was thinking about as I was reading it, and by the way, I'd like to note that he draws the Skrulls, classic Kirby Fantastic Four style Skrulls.
Is there another kind now?
With the big eyes. Well, no, but they don't look like that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, these with the big eyes and the big jaws, I mean, they've changed over the years, but it's very, this whole issue is very Kirby-esque and Kirby Fantastic Four-esque.
Yeah.
But what I'm curious is that, like, how much of this was Hopeless saying, do this? And Rodriguez stepping up to it, like I would love to know what the collaboration on this was,
yeah.
and how much Rodriguez brought to those individual pages, and how they worked them out, and you know, I would love to see what the script says, and then see what we came out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I have no.
Yeah,
you know, I would assume that it's like, well, this is what happens here. Go nuts, and he
went nuts.
He just brought it completely.
Yeah,
it, you know. It's a fully formed issue that is a lot. If you're listening to this and you hadn't been reading this at all, like, you need to go check this issue out. Like, this is a thing.
And you don't even need to read the first two issues to know what's going on. You
totally
just know
clear.
She's pregnant. She's stuck in some weird pregnancy prison, and there are aliens.
It's
and
a hospital.
It's right, but there's a weird like their prisoner kind of element to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so because of the Skrulls and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so
it was great, and it was the pick of the week easy.
All right, cool. Good stuff. It was very, very good. But for me, I think my pick of the week, kind of hands down, was Southern Bastards number 13. And we've already talked a lot about the work of Jason Aaron and Jason Latour on this book and how special it is. And now after, you know, 13 issues, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise. But this was one of those issues where it was like, oh, goddamn.
Mm-hmm.
Like on both levels. Like Latour, you know, you could tell he killed himself on this issue,
mm-hmm.
and the script and the story that Jason Aaron came up with on this is just great. So, you know, basically this is the big homecoming game, and we all know that Boss, you know, Coach Boss, lives and dies by this football team, and his secret weapon has been his defensive coordinator, who killed himself last issue, and now he's got to figure out a way to move on without him, and the team just falls apart, and spoiler, they lose the homecoming game to the crosstown rivals.
Badly.
And you know, and I imagine, so I haven't watched, there's a TV show about football apparently called something like Friday Night something.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched that show, but I imagine it feels like this issue.
Except that.
They win.
No.
Or they're
no.
prettier.
Well, yes.
Yeah,
I mean.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You haven't even watched it, you know about Riggins. It's that in Friday Night Lights, the football team you're watching are the good guys.
Right.
And in this, the football team is the bad guys.
Right.
But it's the same sort of, if you wanted to like Coach Boss, then when he gives his speech to the team, you'd go rah-rah. And
well, I don't even like Coach
you
Boss.
You would say Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. That speech was, the halftime speech was, I mean, yeah, he is out and out the villain of the story, but mm-hmm. that speech was like rousing. And then like the double page spread coming out of it, and you're like, okay, they're going to do this. And like, can they pull it off? And they just get routed. They just get destroyed. And it's like and it had that level of, like, I like it when the unexpected happens. Like, you would think the typical story is that they would show the team win.
Yeah.
But no, but they didn't, and they lose, and that's the conflict, and where we go from here is what makes this book so unique and interesting.
Well, I would take it a little further. You never read Scalped, right?
I read a couple of trades, a couple of first trades.
Yeah. I mean, the strength of that book was always that his characters were completely well-rounded.
Yeah.
So you spent time with the quote-unquote hero, who was kind of a bastard, and then you spent time with the villain, who you know, had admirable things about him.
Right.
And this is the same thing. This is what he's doing. He's showing you a full picture of, it's not a white hat and a black hat. You know, there's just these people, and they make choices, and they're, you know, not everything is horrible about them. And it makes you rethink, like, you know, what you want to happen.
Yep.
I think, you know, like, this, that's not an unusual thing in media, or Tony Soprano, or
right.
Vic
sure.
Mackey, or something like that. There's a lot of that going on, and it's super compelling, because you find yourself for a moment going, oh, I'm kind of rooting for him right now. Wait, but I know he's horrible.
Yep.
And that's hard to do.
And I thought this issue was also interesting because as most popular comic books have been, it's been optioned and it's in development for a TV show. Like, I could, in my head, I could see this episode.
Yeah.
You know, like, this
Although
was
I'm,
really
I'm
cinematic.
Having a hard time. Are they keeping the title?
I don't know.
Because, like, there's a lot about him. Like, ooh, that's a...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. We're in a different media landscape now.
I know.
So maybe. But this issue was very, very cinematic, or mm-hmm. telenovela.
It's not.
It's not a telenovela.
That's not.
I know. I was just really, really impressed by this issue. I thought this would have been my pick of the week. So
good stuff.
Yeah.
I caught up. I missed a couple of shows in December.
You did.
And so I had
it was a rough month.
I had a big yes, it was.
Yeah, no.
I had a big stack of comics that I was behind on, and this was the week where I was like, oh, I have to catch up. And so I mainlined 3 issues of Jupiter's Circle.
Okay.
The latest
volume.
Right? Yeah, the latest. I think they're on the 3rd issue now. So I had to read 1, 2, and 3 all in one spot. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really.
Well, we're in Malarisance.
Yeah, no, and I like that it continues, basically. So I think this story takes place in, I want to say, the 60s, maybe early 60s, late 50s, something like that. And Wilfredo Torres is the artist.
And he's a beast.
Yeah, he's great.
He's really good.
Like, it's very, like a Goran...
Parlov.
Goran Parlov. I was like, Parlov isn't right.
Parlov.
Actually, this one was not Wilfredo Torres. I'm sorry.
No, actually, it wasn't.
It's Chris
Sprouse. Yeah, which is always great.
Did the first 5 pages and then did the breakdowns on the others. And somebody inked those breakdowns. Carl Story and then Walden Wong. A lot of people worked on this. Didn't bother me. Like, it was consistent enough all the way through. And boy, that is Chris Sprouse, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, we're looking at it right now. So
totally. But I don't care. They got it done and they got it out. I don't feel like I lost anything. I'm really enjoying this story, though.
Yep.
I'm enjoying watching these characters who are like. Basically, they're like the cultural elite in a way, but they're also superheroes. It's that weird sort of 60s vibe where things are changing. And
yeah, well, Miller self-professed that this is his Watchmen.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this series has a lot of echoes of that, but with its own Miller kind of touch to it. It's not repeating or rehashing the Watchmen. He's doing his own kind of thing, but with the idea of this, you know, kind of past iconic superheroes. And then, of course, when Jupiter's Legacy comes back with Quietly, we'll get the, you know, the kind of the modern day effect of these characters. So I like the idea that the Jupiter Circle is filling in the blanks.
I like the characters.
Yeah.
I think the characters are really interesting and they're trying to, I don't know. They're fully fleshed out humans. There's not, and they're. It's almost like they're not. They've got their other secret identity that is, you know, they're not heroes all the time, but they kind of are. And it works for me really well, and I've enjoyed this volume.
So I know when the first issue came out, I was fairly critical of the new Daredevil creative team of Charles Soule and Ron Garney. I'm historically a big Ron Garney fan, and I felt as if the stylistic approach he was taking for Daredevil, which was markedly different than his previous approach, it just didn't jive for me. Now after the third issue, I'm kind of coming around. He's doing a Frank Miller.
Romita
mashup kind of
Romita Jr.
Yeah, Romita Jr. Yeah, but with a little bit of Frank Miller and I guess the thing is that like I'm coming around on it, I'm liking it, but that inherently just talking about it makes me not want to like it because I don't want him to do a Romita Frank Miller s do like your own thing, you know. And so, but what this is really good. So
I'm glad that you said that because I got to the end of it and I was like, oh, I think I'm in. Like I was really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I thought it occurred to me a little bit that. I don't know that I can pick out Charles Soule's stuff,
right?
But I felt like I was like, oh, this feels a little different than some of the other stuff. Even though at the beginning they were like, I mean, there's obviously it's a law book. He's a lawyer, like he knows all that stuff.
He's a DA.
But there's a different.
He dropped a major acronym at the end when Murdoch gets demoted. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're on ECAB, and he's like ECAB. That's a waste of my time. And I'm like, I don't know what ECAB means.
Yeah,
you know, like it, you know,
but so. You knew what it means.
No, I don't know what it means.
But you know what they're getting at. You didn't have to look it up to be. You didn't have to put the book down and go, yeah. Well, I can't continue.
Well, no, I know that. But yeah, I'm just saying. But I mean, I meant to
look it up and then didn't.
It's using jargon where we don't actually know the jargon.
I like that though. But that's Star Wars did that.
True, but yeah.
And you were fine with it, and that was made up shit. This is probably real.
Well, that's the thing. So.
I really enjoyed this. Like I want to know the story of the Ten Fingers guy who has the creepiest hands.
Creepy hands.
There was a really.
It's Ten Fingers. So shouldn't his name be 20 Fingers?
The fact that
it's Ten Fingers per hand.
I'm pushing through.
It's Ten Fingers. Per
I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't.
His name should be Mr. Ten Fingers.
I'm not in this fight.
All right, fair enough.
So he gets put down. Basically, he's put in charge of Night Court, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
And when he said that, my head went doo doo.
Okay.
And then he goes into his office at the end, and Ten Fingers is like, "You seem to think I'm a bad guy." And I'm like, "I don't know what's going to happen here. Like, there's a lot of things going on that
but
I want to know."
But again, I feel like that's a trope that we've seen in Daredevil in the past, where
doing tropes in Daredevil is not unheard of.
True. No, I know. But it's
nothing
saying,
we've come down on before.
Where the villain goes to Matt Murdock. In his civilian thing and confronts him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, like too much, like, that's the thing. Is like, this was done quality well. Like, the quality of this is well. But as I read it.
Your quality is very well.
Exactly. It's almost appropriate with the opening fight with the hand.
Yeah.
But as I read it in between pages, I feel the echoes of past.
That's what superhero comics are.
No, but they don't have to be.
It's only bad if you're getting. I mean, like, I don't know. It's playing in the tropes of the aesthetic of what Daredevil is.
Yeah.
If I'll tell you where this would lose me.
Okay.
If this has anything to do with revealing his identity,
right?
Then I don't need to read that again. Yeah. But I don't think that's what's happening. I think that's just going to be.
Well, I guess the thing is that the tropes or the things that I'm picking up on are stuff from Daredevil 20, 30 years ago, not past 10 years.
Fair game.
Yeah, because all new readers who haven't read that stuff.
Right.
So.
But no, it's also a fair game of like that's what comics are.
Yeah,
if you read a Fantastic Four comic and you didn't like the last 20 years of it, but you're like, oh, this is like what they were doing in the 70s. This is like the Byrne stuff.
Yeah.
You would think that was cool.
It depends.
Same thing.
Yeah. I'm not saying I don't think it's cool. I said it was well done.
Fine.
Anyway.
Have you read this last Gang in Town book from the Vertigo?
I have not.
So
part of the Vertigo Essence.
Simon Oliver and Rufus Dayglow.
Yeah. He's good.
Do you know that name?
I do know Rufus Dayglow,
I'd never heard of him, but I'd heard of Simon Oliver, who did the Exterminators. Which I really, really liked. And he did a short run on Hellblazer that I really liked a lot, too. And I've sort of always been waiting for him to come back. I think he did a mini of Hellblazer, actually. Yeah. And he was supposed to take over, and then he didn't because Pete Milligan did.
Yes,
he did
and.
The final run.
Yes, and?
Yes, and?
Just moving along.
I'm getting there.
I know.
Yo, God, having a look at it. So, the story takes place in Britain, sort of takes place in Britain in 1977 during the punk movement, and there's this girl, and she's like a Johnny Rotten character, but there's a mystery behind her, and she might be a rich girl or something like that. The first issue was extremely compelling. This happened on a week that I wasn't here, and I read it, and then I got to the second issue, and I was really excited about it.
Yeah.
And the whole thing goes off the rails because I have no idea what's going on.
Really? In the second issue?
So, I was prepared to come here and say, Ron, did you read this first issue? Because it's really interesting and fun and 70s British punk rocky. And
right up my alley.
And then I get to the second issue and there's all this strange psychedelia and symbolism and stuff that I didn't get any of it. It all went over my head, and I'm not an unintelligent person who doesn't know about things like this.
Right.
But it completely lost me, and I was really disappointed.
Oh.
I can't go as far as to say that it's bad, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
And so that was kind of a bummer.
I do, looking at the book now, and I've seen Rufus Daigle's work before, but I like how it's like a Peter Baggy, Sergio Aragonés kind of style.
It's a lot more like that in this second issue than it was in the first.
Yeah.
The first was a little more consistent. Cartoony, but...
Oh, man, now I want to read Kill Your Boyfriend.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, be sorry.
I mean,
it's
you could do
comic.
It later, I suppose.
Yeah, probably not after the show.
Yeah.
Let's pause the show while I go re-kill your boyfriend.
You know what? We don't have to pause. We'll wait for you. It's fine.
And if you don't know what Kill Your Boyfriend is, go look it up. Grant Morrison, Philip Bond.
So I'm going to read the next one and hope it comes together in some way. But I was very lost, which I found very disappointing.
Well, because I was going to say, this is another example of the increased output from Vertigo.
It does feel like a Vertigo book. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
Like, which is good.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a Image wouldn't take this, so will you?
Right,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, the Vertigo of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, then. I'm going to take a quick break in talking about the week's comics to tell you how you can help support the show. If you go to ifanboy.com/support, you can, there are a couple different ways you can help keep the lights on here at iFanboy HQ, because let me tell you, the room rate on this hotel is not cheap, so, if you go to ifanboy.com,
they're all picking it up.
If you go to ifanboy.com/support, you can click on a link to go shop at Amazon, and any purchase you make at Amazon, we get a little kickback from Amazon themselves, not from you. You don't need to spend a dime. All you need to do is spend the money that you're going to spend at Amazon anyway, and we get a little bit of it.
If you're going to spend something and you want to buy a big thing,
do that, yeah.
We encourage it.
In fact, I think now, the Super Bowl is coming. Now is the time to buy your 90-inch television via Amazon.
Some of you out there might not be married. You can buy whatever you want. Exactly. I'm just saying, do it now.
Yeah, do it now. Do it through Amazon and help us out in the process.
Is your TV an LCD?
LED.
I know, but suppose
LEDs are thin.
Right, suppose you've got an LCD TV, right? Yeah. And you're like, I think this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe you should try an OLED TV. See if your LCD is actually still good.
No, what's funny is that I'm in the market for a new computer monitor.
Right? Are you?
Yeah, well, because remember those Dells I bought in 2005?
I do.
It's dying now.
Yeah.
Like, the power supply's gone.
Bring it around quickly.
So I was shopping, so I searched, I went to Amazon, I clicked the iFanboy link, and I searched for monitors.
Uh-huh.
And on the first page, I see like 20-inch, 24-inch, 27-inch, you know, ViewSonic, LG, Dell. In the first page of search results, a 101-inch Samsung television monitor for, wait for it, $113,000. For sale on Amazon.
What was the average star rating?
I don't think it had any ratings. Oh. So I'm just saying, if you're in the market for a new television and you have $100,000 laying around, go to Amazon. You can get a 101-inch TV.
I don't see a practical application for that.
It looked great. I would go great in my
You'd part. Have to have a
the
hell
viewing
of a
angle. The viewing angle, that's the problem.
Hell of a graphics card.
Yeah, it's true.
Is that a thing still?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess it is on high-end gaming. Yeah. But anyway. So shop at Amazon. Help us out in the process. You can also help us out directly if you choose to, and if you don't like Amazon. You can go to ifanboy.com/support where you can sign up for a recurring membership where you can pay $3 a month or $30 a year. And we thank everybody who's done that. You guys are our lifeblood. Or if you would like, there's a link there to make a straight donation directly to us via PayPal. And, you know, a bunch of you did that over the holidays. We thank you. Some of you have continued to do that. And we thank you as well for your one-time donations. So we are, you know, it's what's the phrase? We're content for whatever.
Content for the people.
I was going to say whatever Tom Merritt says. It's value for value.
Oh, okay.
You know, we're putting out a free podcast once a week. We're giving you value. Hopefully you give us a little back in return. And we thank you very much for your support.
So, if you follow some comic creators, you'll see them say things every once in a while that, oh, you're not going to like what I do in this issue, or blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I see this kind of thing all the time. Water off the back, whatever.
Yeah.
John Layman.
He loves to do that.
John Layman, right? So yeah. I don't even pay that much attention to it.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a jokester, that John Layman.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
Layman says, "You're not gonna like what I do in the next issue of Chew," and I just like, whatever. I didn't even think about it until I got to the end of the last issue of Chew, and I really didn't like what he did in the last issue of Chew.
you felt you got suckered. You got pulled in.
Not in the way that like I think he did a bad job, but yeah. When they do something to a character that you're like, oh, that's really horrible.
Yep. And, so what did they do?
I don't want to spoil it because I think people
we
read
just
it
did
trades.
The spoiler warning.
I know, but this is like an Image book that gets read in a couple of different ways. If you read it, you know.
True, yeah. The Walking Dead Covenant.
Yeah, there's a character who is nothing but good, and she's like the one. Oops.
Well, there you go. You're narrowing it down.
He's killed off a lot of women in this book. Now that I'm thinking about it,
really has actually. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's like for him, maybe that's a thing. Yeah, it was. I was like, oh, that's you bastard.
Yeah.
You bastard. This has been good. It's wrapping up,
that's
clearly.
Effective. That's effective storytelling.
Yeah, I really like what's happening between, I can't remember his name, the big guy with the mustache and Tony.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to talk, obviously, I'm looking right at it. But I really like the conflict
Mason Savoy.
Yeah. Of course, there's a conflict that started last issue and is ending here, and it is, it works.
It's heavy.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's funny, as we're on the eve, we got 6 issues left to go of Chew.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to be in a world without Chew. You know, I feel like it's the kind of thing we took for granted, you know? Like it is. Yeah, I mean, it's been so consistent and
we
so good.
We had like 20 issues of, that was good, did you read that?
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we settled into, there it is again, there okay, is. Nothing
now,
new to say.
And now it's like it's going to be taken away from us, and I'm kind of sad. So
that's true.
Yeah, think about that.
I think Rob and John as those guys who are doing Chew.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. What if they break up?
Clearly they're going to.
Oh.
Anyway.
You can't bring the band back together for some other stupid thing later either.
So moving on, all new, all different Avengers number 4. I did not like the first 3 issues of Kubert on art. I think they were so good. This issue switched over to Mahmoud Asrar, and this was light years better. It was I loved it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I don't know what it was or what it is, but it was delightful. This was delightful.
Sometimes it's about not the artist being good or bad, but just not being right for whatever the vision is you have in your head of what that thing is.
And also, I think what hurts the vision of it or whatnot is, well, the vision's in the book, but aside from that, not hurting the actual vision. But what hurts the thing of the book is, okay, enough with the Alex Ross covers. You know, like the overly painted, you know, kind of Alex Ross cover. Like, I just don't think it needed it. So, you know, the shot of female Thor kissing Falcon Cap. But all in all, this issue was great.
It just sounds like they're just screwing with people.
I know, yeah, exactly.
You know what's going to piss them off? This. But except Alex Ross painted.
But what was great was that the opening sequence of this where they show Jarvis, you know, going to work. And now the Avengers are no longer funded. They have no support. They have no, you know, like, it's not the Avengers that we've known. And they're setting up shop in an old abandoned Stark warehouse. And you the opening sequence is you see Jarvis kind of, you know, who's taking care of his mother. And then he gets in his car and he drives to the new base. And he's not very happy with the state of the kitchen. And he has some words with Tony. And, like, it just, like, it feels... It felt like good Avengers, you know, like it felt, you know, kind of a little looser, a little more carefree.
I'm going to make a comment now, and this is going to come across as
obnoxious.
To me, this is a pretty big compliment I'm about to say.
Okay.
Now, I remember Asrar coming along and doing the J. Farber book. Was it Dynamo 5?
Dynamo 5, yeah.
It was pretty good, right? Yeah. Right off. Oh, that guy's got a thing. He's got a. This looks.
This is next
this
level.
Is,
yeah.
Well. I'm getting a little imminent here.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
And so if you've been listening to me and I'm saying that...
Yeah, that's a big compliment.
That's a big compliment.
But also not in a copying imminent
not
in a
ape,
way, like Eminem-esque, you know, Eminem, in terms of handling a lot of action, handling the individual, like Asrar putting so much like character in individual faces and not just the main characters of the Avengers, but even like the public, like the victims of the they're trying to get the public out of the way of this hurricane villain. And you know, like every panel sings with action and with reaction. And so it's like he's really like he's so good. Follow him on Instagram. You see his sketches and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's a great artist. Really nice guy.
Great guy.
So there. I want to check in on Superman again.
Okay.
Superman by Gene Yang, which at first I was like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
They took Romita Jr. off of it, or he went somewhere. I don't know who
As
did
they
it.
Should. Yep.
And Howard Porter is on it.
Yeah. JLA, Grant Morrison, JLA.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I was trying to think of something other than that, but that's why I know him. But he doesn't draw like that anymore?
No, he doesn't, because he hurt his hand.
Yeah. It's great. Like, when they switched Porter in, the book is quirky. It's weird. It does not feel like Superman. Nothing happening in there. If I felt like Superman had to be a certain way, I'd be mad at this book, but I don't.
Right.
I'm really enjoying the weirder it gets and the longer. I'm really glad I stuck with it. Is my point.
Yeah.
It's this strange little book.
Gene Yang's perspective is so unique as a storyteller.
Yeah.
So like I love the fact that he's on this book, and I think that he's doing a great job.
They do. I mean, like Superman, they haven't. It's been really hard to find anybody do anything interesting with Superman for a while, and I was like, I'm not sure what this is, but I'm invested in it, and I feel like we're about to be out of the Superman doesn't have powers phase.
Yeah.
And I was really excited because I was like, oh, it looks like he's about to cure himself here.
Right.
And I want that to be.
And the thing is that, like, I have nothing against the Porter art, and I think the Porter art is improved over the Romita. I don't think that was a good match. Mm-hmm. But I still don't think they found the right artist to illustrate Yang's stories.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. I don't.
You know what Porter looks a lot like? He looks like a softer Lanil Yu.
Yes, or like a softer Roquefort.
Yeah, but not that.
Towards the end of the issue, yeah.
I was gonna say top cowie.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel as if they found Gene Yang's Chris Somney. I'm not saying that it needs to be Chris Somney, but like if they put Doc Shaner on.
Gonna say exactly that.
Yeah, like if they found someone with a more Silver Agey, simpler, clean line approach, and not this DC house style of jagged lines and teen angst. I think this book could sing. I think it could really sing.
You know what this has got in it? It's got mechs.
Too many mechs. So moving on, continuing the first issues of the all new, all different Marvel for the fourth time. But Old Man Logan came out this week, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Andrea Sorrentino. Is that the guy's name? I think it is. But basically, it's the creative team.
Yeah, Andrea Sorrentino.
Yeah, Andrea.
Oh, they did
Green Arrow
and Hawkeye, I think, for a little bit.
No, not together.
No,
they did Green Arrow.
Okay,
that's what it was. They did Green Arrow DC, and then Sorrentino came over, did some stuff with Bendis on the X-Men books.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Okay.
And so it's great to see them together. I think Sorrentino's approach, his artistic approach, is unlike anything any other artist out there. Like, he just looks unlike anybody. And I love that. Yeah, we're looking at it right now, and it's just amazing. But the thing is that this is the Old Man Logan character that Mark Miller wrote, that through Secret Wars is now in the world. But I got no... The problem with this is the story, in that there's... I don't know when or where this takes place.
Here's what I think. Yeah. Old Man Logan was perfect
because
it was a story and it ended, and they could have left him there.
But here's the thing is that they want to bring him back. They want to bring him into Marvel continuity. They put him in Extraordinary X-Men. He's a member of the X-Men. That's fine, right? But this book, he's waking up. He doesn't have his memories. He's trying to avenge the death of his son. He's behaving as if he's in the world that Old Man Logan came from. But is this post-Secret Wars? Is this the regular? Like, it's very confusing.
We're doing this again?
Yes. It's very confusing. It's very confusing. On its own, the story read fine. And if you don't care about the greater Marvel Universe and you like this character, you'll enjoy it. And Sorrentino's art is great. But trying to make this puzzle piece fit into the larger puzzle of Marvel, it was frustrating.
So, Andrea, insert panel Sorrentino.
Exactly, yeah. Loves the insert panels. Last issue of Twilight Children from Darwin Cook and Gilbert Hernandez came out. And playing true to form, it looks beautiful. Darwin is amazing. And like every other Gilbert Hernandez story, fuck if I know what happened.
I don't.
What's funny is that Gilbert Hernandez writes very... avant-garde kind of almost impressionistic comics. And the thing was is that, like, I can't tell you exactly what happened, what the balls of light were, and why the blonde woman had some sense of control over them, and what the conflict was and what the resolution was. But as I read this and as I finished it, by the end of it, I was getting emotional. Like, when we see the bald guy who lives on the beach who lost his family, and then he goes to a flashback of when he was with his family. Like, it tugged on the heartstrings. I don't know why, but it did. So,
well, the art's pretty damn evocative. Yeah. There's a bit where the big ball is flaming out, and the blonde girl is hugging the guy, and it looks like they're going to be burned to a crisp, but they're both happy and smile. It's just, yeah. it's great Darwin art, yeah, is what it is. And great Dave Stewart colors. I mean, that's the other half of it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what happened.
There's no idea what happened, but it was fun. I would like to read this in the trade all as one to see if that makes any more sense. I don't think it will.
I don't think so.
Because I can hand you a stack of Gilbert Hernandez books that I couldn't tell you what happened, but they're always fun and they're always interesting and challenging. But all right, and the last book I just wanted to highlight was Deadly Class number 18 from Rick Remender and Wes Craig, mainly because this is just your periodic reminder that in addition to how great Remender is and the stories that he does are great, Wes Craig is a beast. And there is a fight scene in this issue that I just can't believe what Wes Craig is able to do. Similar to Ron Garney, very evocative of Frank Miller.
Yeah, actually it was.
Very Frank Miller-esque.
Like the lines don't look like it, but everything else does.
But there's one panel of the girl with the tattoos on her arm, stuff like that. Like it could have been a straight out of Sin City.
Yeah.
But not aping it. It definitely is Wes Craig, definitely is Deadly Class, definitely has its own identity, but it memories of Frank Miller.
Yeah, so, and Klaus Janson.
Speaking of Frank Miller, I forgot to mention that in Old Man Logan, there's a double page spread homage to Dark Knight Returns.
I made a face.
There's a double page spread where Logan jumps off a building, claws teeth, and it's blue background with the lightning bolt.
Yeah.
And it says Sorrentino after Miller. Mm. It's like, well, I don't understand why I do that.
Because it's fun to draw.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It makes you... we've seen it so much that I'm always like, oh, you've taken me out of the thing that you're doing.
Yeah. Yes, that's the thing. That's exactly what it did, because it didn't match the tonality of the book. I mean, go back to look at it. But... It absolutely pulled me out of that story, because Sorrentino's art is so individual, is so unique to his own style, that then to do an homage to somebody as identifiable or as iconic as Frank Miller, and especially that Dark Knight image, it completely pulled me out of the story. I mean, it completely did.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, because the whole book was really was compelling despite not fitting into the greater continuity.
I've tried to go back and read some of it, because I liked Old Man Logan a lot. So when they brought it back, I thought, oh, I think Bendis wrote the...
He wrote the miniseries.
I don't think I finished it.
Yeah.
I wanted to. What's funny is that... The way that he draws Logan in a lot of these, he looks like he has like a walrusy mustache, because the bottom of his face is in shadow.
Yeah,
and I don't know that works.
But it's funny, because it's I don't know what Miller did to make it sing so well when he did his Old Man Logan story, and everything after that has just been like, eh.
You know, and that was during a time when Miller was doing a lot of stuff that I was in no way interested in.
Right.
And also, I did not think I would be interested in that.
Right.
I mean, he had Steve McNiven. That helped a whole lot. Yeah. But he doesn't put too much in anything.
Right.
So he leaves you to fill in a lot of...
And we just turned to the page of the double page spread, and it even says, it says, after Miller.
Yeah. He signed the page. How do we feel about signing a page in the middle?
I love it.
You're okay with that?
Totally okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah, totally fine with that.
You know, Riso used to do that a lot.
Riso does that all the time. Yeah, he still does it.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Okay, yeah, so going back to Deadly Class, though, Deadly Class 18, if you're not reading Deadly Class, you should, so just because Wes Craig is just amazing.
Yeah, I fell off this book a little bit, and I caught back up this issue, and I've been really in the last couple of issues, because something happened, basically. Yeah. For a little while, it was like, nothing was happening, but we were stuck in a lot of sadness.
A lot of sadness, so... All right, cool. Well, those are the books that we read this week. If you go to ifanboy.com, you can comment on the post for the show and tell everyone what you thought of the books that you read, or what if you disagree with us or agree with us. Keep it positive. Keep it fun. We're all friends here.
It's no need to get up about anything.
No. All right, so let's move on to some audience questions via email. Josh, why don't you take the first one?
Zach from Wales, UK said that... In September 2009, I feel like Shatner. Yeah. In September 2009, you picked Astro City number 1 as your pick of the week. Does that track?
Sure, yeah, when it relaunched.
That was long ago?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I think like the 30s now, right?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I decided then and there that I wanted to get in on this and started thinking about where to start. Last week... Finally decided on Life in the Big City, which I instantly followed up with Confession. So you decided to get in on it, and it took you 6 years.
Wow, that might be trades. That we might have a winner in terms of thinking about something.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't even thinking about it that way.
Yeah, so, I was really thinking about where am I going to start Astro City 6 years later.
Good job. Yeah. Anyway, he says, I believe I can read them in any order, and while I'm sure I'll fill them all out eventually, if I can only get two or three more in the near future, which should I get? Are there any I should avoid completely?
Oh, that's oh wow.
It was so, it's a
really good question.
It's challenging.
I've got to go to the to
so,
the.
So
the
my question
this,
for
so
you,
make sure I get it right.
My question for you right away is while you do that, should he read The Dark Ages?
No, that's the one you avoid.
You think so?
Absolutely.
So the Dark Ages was this. I want to say it was four issue miniseries, 16 issues altogether, about the 70s, following these two brothers, and it went on a really long time.
Too long.
And it wasn't much of a payoff.
Yep.
It had none of that happy, fun, majestic feeling that we get from what you just read.
Yeah. So here we go. It's technically in the sequence of the trade paperbacks. Astro City Volume 6 is The Dark Age Book 1, Brothers and Other Strangers, which collects Astro City The Dark Ages Volume 1 and Volume 2, which are both four-issue miniseries. And then Astro City Volume 7, The Dark Age Book 2, Brothers in Arms, which collects Astro City The Dark Age Volume 3 and 4, both four-issue miniseries.
16 issues.
So 16 issues. 16 issues that took years to come out and were dark and dragged and were slow.
And I bought and read every single one.
Oh, so did I. So did I.
Like, I would never drop this book.
They were the antithesis of what Astro City,
which, to be fair,
is.
I think was his intention.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it failed on him, other than in the end it wasn't compelling because of that.
Yeah.
I think he saw what he was trying to do, and that's. But he made it 16 issues long, and it took years and years and years. If it had been a four issue arc, we would have been like, yeah, it's fine.
Yep. So that said, in terms of what you want to go back to read, so what you should read, so avoid the two Dark Ages books. I would say read Astro City Volume 4, Tarnished Angel.
Yep.
That's the about steel. the steel guy who gets out of prison, yep. And that was really good. And then I would go a little more recent, and I would pick up the most recent trade paperback, Astro City Volume 12, Lover's Quarrel, which is about Cracker Jack and Quarrel.
Now, what I'm curious is if he heard us talk about it on issue 1, has he been buying the issues all along, and now he's wondering what to go back and get?
I don't know. I'm not him.
Yeah. Anything from this most recent volume
is good. Is good.
You should read all of it.
I would say read everything but the Dark Age books, and then go back and read the Dark Age books so you can see why they.
And it doesn't matter what order you read them in.
It does not matter. Yep.
So that doesn't matter. And you've read the two best things.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest.
Yep.
But you'll get that feeling again. You'll
How
you'll find
good
it again.
Confession?
Oh,
Confession is. It's not even fair.
I really like Life in the Big City the most.
I love Confession.
They're different.
Because Life in the City was all those one issue. Yeah. There's just
but they
one,
were all great.
They were all great. No, but Confession was the.
I really like the Cracker Jack story.
Yeah, well, you should like Lover's Quarrel. Yeah. That's the new Cracker Jack story. So, anyway, all right. So, great question there, Zach from Wales. Thank you. Our second email comes from Pavel from St. Petersburg, Russia.
We're international today.
I see. In Russia, comics read you. Pavel says, you've mentioned that your former substitute members for the show all stopped reading comics. Do you think that it's an actual event on its own? Does it mean that lots of people like you stopped reading comics? If so, why did it happen? My answer is movie and TV series based on comics did replace the need in a weekly comic book entertainment. I disagree with you, Pavel, and your communist ways.
Okay, I would just like to go ahead and insert here that you should not listen to what he's saying right now.
No, I don't know if you're a communist. It's fine.
He's not. It's been 20-plus years.
Well, he might be. Personally, his personal politics might be. We don't know.
I guess that's acceptable.
Right, yeah, exactly. But anyway.
I feel uncomfortable talking about this. I'm going to go ahead and apologize again.
Anyway.
Because that's what a good liberal does.
Anyway, I think that a lot of the folks that used to write for us and work for us who don't read, we should clarify, don't read weekly issue comics anymore, because it's hard going to the store every Wednesday or downloading them every Wednesday, keeping up with all the reboots and the relaunches and the number ones and stuff like that. That fatigue wore a lot of people down. It doesn't mean they don't read comics anymore. I think they still read comics, but they're more inclined to pick up a trade or read something here and there, let it collect and let it pick up. It's that weekly fix that, honestly, find me anybody who's done it for more than 5 years in a row without taking a break at some point. That is rare these days.
You've seen them in line.
Yeah, I know.
A couple of things I would add to that is that when they were working for a comic book site, they were reading issues weekly because that was how you did the thing that we did.
It was your job,
And, you know, it was a low-paying job.
Yeah. But it paid.
But then the other thing is I really believe that comics is super cyclical. Mainstream comics are cyclical in that after about 10 years, if you really stay, you're going to start seeing – the Ferris wheel come around again.
Yeah.
And you start saying, oh, I've read this superhero story before. Or
oh, you
I've
mean
read,
like Daredevil?
Yeah, and it, like,
funny how that came around.
It just gets really hard to feel like you're reading something original, and for some people, that is the thing. The, oh, I want this. It feels familiar. It's good. It's a soap opera. You're gonna keep watching it over.
That's
for
that,
some people,
the telenovela.
Yeah, for some people, there you go.
There you go.
For some people, they go, oh, okay, I saw everything this has to offer. I'm gonna.
It's too late. I'd seen it all. I'd seen everything.
You know I had. I mean, that happens to me to a certain extent, and because we keep doing this,
I'm riddled with it.
I have to stop making references to things that are so vague. Only you're the one laughing at them. This is bad radio. I have to search for things that make me still excited about comics, and because it's not hard because the pick of the week, the Javier Rodriguez pages, I went, oh, that's a thing I can get excited about. That's something I can hang my hat on.
You see, that's going back to what we're talking about Daredevil and things in general. We talked about how it was great because he's doing something in the spirit of Kirby, Fantastic Four 60s, but not aping it. And right now, it's unlike anything else that's that book was unlike any other book that I read this week, except that it has hints of Eisner, it has hints of Kirby. Like, it's that weird mix of reverence for the past without drowning in nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I would counter saying that you're saying that movies and TV are the things that are taking away from comics, but movies, not TV, maybe TV to a certain extent, but movies definitely are drowning in nostalgia and preying on our, you know, like another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and another, like all this. You know,
okay, so you know. I just, to get back to sort of the original question.
Sorry. Yeah,
you diverted a little bit.
A little bit.
I think people drop in and out of comics, and now more than at any time before, there's a lot of different ways to be a comic book reader. There only used to be reading issues. And if people who started like that are more likely to stick with it like that. But people who came in later, they see options and they have other things they can do. So none of the people who used to write for iFanboy necessarily read their comics weekly the same way that we are doing or that we've always done. But like they're reading, they've got Marvel Unlimited, they're reading the stuff 6 months later, or they're reading trades that they hear about, or they're reading different kinds of comics, you know, some other kind of comics.
Some other comic that we don't even know about. All right. Thank you, Pavel, for your question. To bring it back domestically, we got one more question from Patrick from North Carolina, who says, I have a question for you. I thought about this a good long while. I skipped the birth of my second child to think about this question.
Accepted.
That's dedication. Good job.
Accepted.
But I wondered about slabbing comics. Has anyone at iFanboy ever slabbed a comic? Was it worth it to you? How would you go about selecting a comic to get slabbed?
And now, if you know about us historically on this, we put up a video in 2008.
Yep.
It's on the YouTube of a friend of ours won a slabbed Fathom comic, Michael Turner's Fathom.
In a raffle.
When Michael Turner was still alive, by the way, according to some of the comments who thinks that we're disrespect, he was alive and well then.
Yes.
We ripped it open and sort of like made a joke about how these are ruining comics.
Comics are meant to be read, not slammed, and that sort of thing. So.
And that was 2008.
Yep.
How do you feel now?
I feel the same.
Feel the same?
I mean, it all depends on what your approach is. Is that if you are into comics for collecting and selling and reselling and all that sort of stuff, then slabbing is the best way to get the most amount of value for a comic because it is encased in plastic and sealed and certified and registered. And so you know that you've got a 9.9 copy of The Walking Dead number one and you can sell that for $1,000 or whatever it is. That's well and good. I read comics.
Okay.
I don't,
Let's just say, for argument's sake, that you had a Amazing Fantasy 15.
Okay.
Now, it's not going to be the kind of thing that you're really going to take out and touch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, in that instance, would you say the preservation aspect of that
probably
is a valid thing?
I could see an argument for that, yeah.
And I think I can agree with that, too.
Yeah, right.
An issue of Fathom?
Right.
Not as much. Exactly. That Walking Dead issue, even.
But the thing is, what the whole slabbing process did, though, was that it normalized the ratings and gave something that can be attributable to allow for more eBay sales. That's basically what it comes down to. Because the problem was before slabbing.
I remember the V.
Yeah. V.
VFM.
NM.
NM. M.
Yeah. I remember arguing with the comic book store guy over the quality of the X-Factor mm-hmm. 1 I was buying from him. Yeah. And he said it was NM, and I said it was VF, and, you know, and the difference was about $30, and I was 13, and that yeah. was a lot of money, and, you know, and
that sounds so fun and romantic to me in that way.
Like, yeah,
and,
yeah.
But
well, look at the corner. The corner's bent. Look at the, you know, like whatever. But now with the slabbing, it takes that out of it mm-hmm. because you have a certified organization saying, no, this is a 9.8, and here are the known, you know, there's discoloring or whatever, you know. So
I think
it just makes it easier for the aftermarket sale of comics.
I think it's fine because it seems like that's a segregated segment of comics.
So you're pro segregation?
I'm just saying I don't care.
No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I don't it's silly to do to a lot of comics, and it's an inflated value among collectors. You remember at a certain point we were getting issues sent to us by a certain publisher, and like some of the variants came along and they were really like quote unquote worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So like a guy would do a variant cover on something one week and it was like a big deal, and on eBay that week it was selling for $75.
Yeah.
I sold the hell out of mine.
Right.
Because I knew a week later no one would ever talk about that or think about it again. If somebody yep. wants to pay for it, fine. And yeah. I totally did that.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's fine if that's what right. you do. I don't do that, so I don't really care. But yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was like a little, like, I was like, I think I need money that week or something.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, if you want to check old classic comics, fine. I get
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But I think that,
I mean, because you're getting it's a certified, you know what you're getting with that.
And it's a significant value.
Yeah.
When we're talking about recent comics, though, I think it's silly.
Agreed. So there you go, Patrick. Hope that answers your question and validated the time you spent thinking about it.
Did you like those emails? Would you like to be part of that? You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. So email us. Those were good questions. You could. We don't have a voicemail line anymore, but if you wanted to send us an audio clip, no one would yell at you.
That's fine.
Same deal. If you'd like to hear us discuss other things besides comics, you think, boy, what do they think about one of the most beloved movies of the last 25 years?
Is it one of the most beloved movies of the last 25 years? By us.
To but, us
yeah,
and
enough,
a
yeah.
segment of people.
It should be everyone, if you ask me. That's why we're doing it.
You know what? If everybody loved it, I wouldn't like it as much.
Well, that's the sad circle
totally.
Of life there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's not true.
So what movie is it?
Goodfellas Minute. That's our other show
yep.
where we are talking about Goodfellas, the Martin Scorsese film from 1990. Which we all love very much, 1 minute at a time, every day, every weekday. So Monday through Friday, you get 1 minute that we talk. The show is longer than 1 minute.
Right.
We talk about 1 minute of the movie for about 20 to 30 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes.
Depends on the minute,
yeah. So last week, we had a fantastic guest of Greg Young from the Bowery Boys podcast. This was one of our favorite podcasts, and he is a font of knowledge both about film and New York City history.
New York City history podcast.
And so if you haven't listened to Goodfellas Minute and you like New York City, you should go back and listen to those episodes. And we got some other great episodes coming up as well, so go to goodfellasminute.com to find out about that. And you can head over to our home on the internet at ifanboy.com, where you, as I said, mentioned earlier, you can comment on this show, talk about this week's books, and you can find all the other previous podcasts that we published. In fact, if you are a fan of the CW television shows, you might want to go back in the feed and take a listen to me and Connor talking about DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
When is it enough?
There's no, I don't know.
Are you like I know Connor's like, well, we're gonna watch them because that's what he does.
Right.
But like, how do you feel? Are you still in?
Here's the thing. I'll give Greg Berlanti and his crew credit. They do a really good job.
Okay, and you like what they're doing.
This past week of The Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow has been fantastic.
Okay,
what is
it giving you? I know it's giving you something that DC Comics is not currently
yes.
giving you.
Yes, entertainment. enjoyable entertainment.
A lack of frustration.
No, it's giving. I mean, like Flash is lighthearted and mm-hmm. Silver Agey, and like and everyone's really likable on it. And what's
you just
his
like
name?
Spending
Tom?
Time with the people. I literally don't know.
Tom Cavanaugh.
Yeah.
Tom Cavanaugh is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just a blast. Arrow is great, and Legends of Tomorrow. I thought Legends of Tomorrow wasn't going to work because there's a bunch of B, C list characters.
It looks very silly,
but it is. But it works. So I compared Legends of Tomorrow to is very Guardians of the Galaxy esque.
Uh-huh.
So that makes sense.
We are. I know that there's a cliche where people are like, could you believe that this is happening? But I think when I started to see like the newest slate of these shows, I was like, yep. Really? That we're doing this?
Yep, we are.
This is going to keep going. When will people have had enough?
Yeah. As of now, it's still working. So
I'm sorry. I don't go anyway. On those shows, so I had to do that here.
Yeah. Anyway, so you go back and you should go back and listen to the show and listen
I'm
to us talk about
it.
Anyway, no, listen to us talk about it.
It won't have any context.
Anyway.
I can talk to you about all sorts of stuff.
So go back and
I have your phone number.
So you can go back and download that episode and listen to it if you haven't.
We don't call often.
And finally, you can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and over on Twitter at ifanboy. And if you want to follow us individually, although I don't know why, you can follow me at RonXO and Josh.
I make jokes.
Josh.
I make topical jokes.
You make jokes? And you can follow Josh at J.A. Flanagan and Connor at C.S. Kilpatrick. And finally, if you dig the show, go to iTunes and write a review about it. You can write a review about the show on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends. Go to the comic book store, tell them about a great podcast that you listen to called iFanboy. We thank everybody who has done that for us. We appreciate you helping to spread the word.
What, do you got a cab on the way?
Yeah. So that's going to wrap it up for this Two Jamokes Live in San Francisco. Live, not live. Thank you for listening, as always. Until next time, I'm Ron.
Am I allowed to say my name at this part?
Sure.
Okay, I'm Josh.
No, but it's fine.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.